Eye on the Arctic, views from the north. I'm Elise Quinn. So Arctic news continued to dominate global headlines in 2015, in everything from business to climate and politics. But now that the year has grown to a close, that means it's time for our Eye on the Arctic Year in Review series. Now, that's when we look back at the people and events that marked the year in Northern news and look at how they shaped or even changed our understanding and perceptions of the Arctic. Now, as our regular listeners are well aware by now, we do that by turning to our Eye on the Arctic bloggers around the globe. Now, you followed their analysis and opinion throughout the year, but this time of year is when you get to hear from them directly about what they think mattered most in 2015. Now, today we're checking in with Mia Bennett. She runs the Cryopolitics blog that appears frequently on Eye on the Arctic, and she's also a PhD student at the UCLA Department of Geography, and we've reached her today in San Francisco. Mia Bennett, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. And I thought today we would start first with the sort of big picture. When you're looking back at 2015, and if you had to sum up Arctic news in one word, what would it be?
I'd probably say the word hopeful. And I think this is for a number of reasons. One, just a few weeks ago, of course, we had COP21. And although this didn't, we reached an agreement. So this is exciting. It's not necessarily very concrete, but it's still hopeful, I think. Obama visited the Arctic, and that was a big deal since he was the first sitting U.S. president to go there. Shell didn't come up with any oil in its well, so this is hopeful for environmentalists, although maybe not such a rosy picture for people looking for oil to be found in the Alaskan Arctic, say. And then just lastly, continued relative peace between Russia and the West in the Arctic. I think this is cause for a pretty hopeful situation for the region this year and hopefully looking forward as well.
So you've touched on some of these themes of the year. If we were going to drill down and look at what the three most important Arctic stories of 2015 were to you, take us through them. Where would you start?
Sure. I'd probably start, first of all, with Shell not finding any oil in the Chukchi Sea and its well up north of Alaska. I think this was a major disappointment to many in Alaska, where 90% of the GDP comes from oil. But at the same time, probably heartening for the many environmentalists and people who are just against oil. And this is also a big change because Shell's sunk $7 billion into the state, and now it's going to pull out for the time being. So this is really shaking things up for Alaska's oil future, I think. And then on top of that, put the nail in the coffin for Arctic oil in America, Obama has canceled the oil lease sales for 2016 and 2017. So I think this is a pretty big story for the American Arctic, at least. And also looking at another story coming out of the American Arctic, I would say, is the U.S. taking over the chairmanship of the Arctic Council from Canada. I think what we're seeing is that the U.S. is focusing more on climate initiatives than Canada has done so. But at the same time, it's continuing some of the Canadian initiatives like the Arctic Economic Council. So I think we'll sort of continue to see the U.S. shape its Arctic policy in the region under the banner of the One Arctic Shared Opportunities, Challenges, and Responses over the next year, and seeing how that really unfolds as the U.S. Has this full year as chair will be interesting. And I should just add related to that, it would probably be Obama's visit to the Arctic as U.S. chairmanship of the Arctic Council. I think this was a really big sort of publicity thing and brought a lot of positive attention when he was in the region.
And we should maybe remind our listeners about this. It was, if I remember correctly, end of August, beginning of September. And it was inviting people from all around the world to Alaska to talk about things like climate.
Exactly, yes. So Obama went to the state for, I think, a three-day visit, being the first sitting U.S. president to do that. And he went not only to Anchorage, I think, or Fairbanks, where the Glacier Conference was held with many scientists and visiting delegates and policymakers. But he also visited sort of the front lines of climate change. So some of these villages, like, I forget if he went to Kivalina or Shishmaref, but where they're really experiencing severe shoreline erosion and possibly even having to relocate. So we really saw, and I think was touched by this severe Arctic climate change happening right under his feet when he visited.
And then for your third story,
I would say for the third story, it's probably COP21. So although this isn't directly related to the Arctic, I think the whole idea that the world leaders have finally recognized on paper that there is a climate problem and that they do need to try to limit warming to below 2 degrees Celsius on average, if not 1.5 degrees, I think this is a big step in the right direction. I would still like to see a lot more concrete efforts being made and not just words about they're going to try to limit or make initiatives, but actual steps to reduce production of, say, fossil fuels. But I think this is something that is good news for the Arctic, even though the Arctic still needs a lot more in order for the situation environmentally to sort of begin to return to normal, even if that's still even possible. I'm not really sure.
And, you know, before we leave 2015, let's have a look at what, from your vantage point, might be the most undercovered northern story that you think is important. What did media or policymakers overlook this year that you would have liked to see more attention paid to?
I think I probably would have liked to see more about the Canadian election, actually. You know, it's a big deal that Justin Trudeau is now prime minister and Stephen Harper's about decade-year-long reign in Canada is over. And with that, I think we're possibly seeing the end of a very sort of aggressive or muscular Canadian sovereignty in the Arctic, but it's not entirely sure. And I think one reason that we haven't heard too much from the media about how Trudeau will act or how he will enact policy in the Arctic is because it's still kind of an unknown, so there isn't really too much to write about. But I think a little bit more drilling down and questioning him on how he's going to see how he would like to see the region evolve during his tenure would be interesting to know. You know, I think during his campaign, he was in Nunavut and he criticized Harper's annual photo op. So, you know, whether this trip will continue is unclear. But at the same time, he did say that he wants to increase the northern tax break. So he does have a few policy initiatives, but understanding more what he'd like to do in the region would be very helpful, I think. And it will be also be interesting because over the next couple of years, we'll see some of Harper's projects finally come to fruition, like the opening of the Canadian High Arctic Research Station and the Inuvik-Tuktoyaktuk Highway. But whether Trudeau himself will sort of undertake any of these big-ticket Arctic infrastructure projects, that's also a big unknown. So sort of, you know, I think more needs to be written and understood and investigated in this story.
And so we will close the chapter on 2015 now. Let's look at what's coming up this year. In 2016, what are you going to be watching for? What stories are you going to be following and things that we should be paying attention to?
Sure. I mean, I'm not one who's very excited to make predictions a lot because predictions can often turn out wrong. But I think in terms of what we might just want to be looking for, one would have to be mining in Greenland. 2 years ago now, the Greenlandic parliament overturned a ban on uranium mining, which had been in existence since the 80s. So this sort of opened the door for the possibility of extracting rare earth minerals, which are often tied up with uranium in Greenland. So I think the next year, already we're starting to hear about one company which will be applying for a mining license application project for the Kvanefjeld rare earth minerals, and this is sort of the most controversial one in Greenland. And a Canadian mining company, True North Gems, they've already begun to extract ore and waste rock at their Ruby deposit in southwest Greenland. So I think finally we're starting to see a lot of the mining activities in Greenland possibly reach that sort of crest of the wave where we might see a lot more activity and more than just feasibility statements, but actually mining taking place. This is a possibility.
And besides Greenland, is there one or two other stories that you're going to be following?
I would say it's probably good to continue to watch the price of oil. Just from the little bit I've read about it so far, I think it's still predicted to fall lower yet, which, of course, is not good news for the Arctic oil industry, since they have pretty high break-even points, at least $50, if not $90, in many parts of the Arctic. And this could jeopardize Norway's desire to push farther north into its fields, or especially Russia, which is looking to very much develop its offshore continental shelf. And then back in Norway, the Italian company Eni, which is operating the first Arctic offshore oil field there, the Goliath field, that's been plagued by delays, which have actually really hamstrung the project as the price of oil has continued to fall. And that project is only going to maybe make its first delivery next year. So oil, I think, in the Arctic is going to continue to have a pretty bleak picture in the year ahead. And lastly, I think the thing to watch out for is just the continued environmental changes that people living in the Arctic are perceiving, what scientists are studying in the region, what they're seeing. This year, the sea ice was the fourth lowest on record, so not nearly as bad as some of the previous melt years, and I think 2007 was the record. But this year, say we're having El Nino in more southern latitudes, and this could potentially push a lot of heat up into the Arctic, and that could exacerbate, say, melting of the Greenland ice sheet. So I think sort of all these connections between global climate are going to be important to watch. And along with that, I think ocean acidification. This is something that's not really talked about too much in, say, the media. We mostly hear about carbon and that sort of problem. But understanding how the oceans are changing as well, I think this is something to keep an eye on as climate continues to be talked about in light of COP21 and in light of all the changes going on in the world this year and in the future.
Well, Mia Bennett, thank you so much for taking the time today to speak with us, and we will certainly be following your blog in 2016.
Great. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Have a great day.